name is Richard Wally. I sometimes co-host with you on Sundays or Mondays. I would like to know what you would like to do for that this week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Beaverton, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
And from Garden Grove, California. I don't know why I said it that way. I feel very self-conscious about that. You're Cassidy Robinson.
First order of business.
Okay.
I was watching the Netflix homework earlier today. And it's a Thai film.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got Thai food.
I got Thai food. You know how I work.
I know how you roll. Yeah, you big old racist.
I just don't need a lot of persuasion to buy Asian cuisine. It really anything can make me go for Chinese or Thai. So I called up this place that's kind of close to my house, and they make really good Thai food. Maybe the new guy or something, but they usually ask you what level of hotness you want if it's a spicy dish, which is what I order. And they usually ask from 1 to 5.
Sure.
And I usually pick a 3, somewhere in the middle. I want to feel it, but I don't want to, like, be in pain. He didn't ask, and I forgot to tell. So, when I went to go pick it up, I guess he just assumed a 5. Because that is definitely what I had.
Maybe he's not new and he hates you. And so he gave you the 5 because he's like, I really want his asshole to burn off.
Well, it's going to.
Oh, okay.
If that was his goal, then mission accomplished. Because I was literally in pain. I paused the movie about halfway through, started watching again. I had to, like, stop the movie and just finish. Because I couldn't see because I had tears running down my face. And my nose was running. And I know I'm going to feel it tomorrow. It's going to be bad times.
Bad times and nursery rhymes.
Other order of business. this week was a free comic book day. Yesterday.
It was free comic book day. Very exciting. It's like a weird nerd holiday. Because it's free comic book day and then it was also... today, May the 4th be with you.
Yes. Slash Audrey Hepburn's birthday, depending on where you are in the film geek spectrum. It's nice to be in a big city when you're to celebrate Free Comic Book Day, isn't it?
Because you can get them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like Pocatello, back when they had a comic shop, I guess they do again, but for a while we didn't. They would only let you take one.
Yeah.
Unless you were, like, volunteering and could maybe sneak a few. Here, both places I went to let me pick, like, 4 or 5.
Yeah, no, we... at the ones here, you can pick up to 10.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's insane. So, but I guess a lot of the publishing houses are, like, there, so...
There's like, 3, yeah.
And then I emailed, I texted you yesterday because I've been out of the comic loop for a while. I don't really read regularly like you do. And, you know, I knew there was going to be a lot of stuff that was new or I didn't know what it was or I didn't know what was more important than others as far as what to pick out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to ask you for advice and I texted you and I say, hey, going to Free Comic Book Day, what should I pick up? Because I knew you had already probably gone a couple hours before me. And you just text me back, Archie.
I did.
That was very rude.
What did you text back?
I said, fuck you.
Yes, yes, you did. No, I laughed in the store and people looked at me because I'm thought sure it was
you
funny.
Did. I bet you laughed when you sent it.
Yeah, I did. It was a very fun process, the whole thing for me. There was Archie, though. Did you pick up Archie?
I did see it. No, I didn't.
Oh. Well, actually, I mean, teasing you, though, but seriously, the new, like, there's, like, this new undead Archie, apparently. A lot of people think it's pretty good, so I've been meaning to check that one out.
Oh,
not
yeah.
being joking.
But that isn't how you meant it.
No, I was just being an asshole.
Yeah.
What did you end up getting?
A bunch of stuff. I looked, actually, you posted, like, a photo.
Did
or
I?
Jackie did.
Jackie probably did.
And so I tried to remember some of those, because I was okay. like, well, you know, we're kind of into the same stuff. So I picked up the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Rocket Raccoon.
Sure. Because
I figured those are going to be kind of hot items with the movies coming out, and they might have some tie-in.
Mm.
There's Not that really, Uber comic.
You had what?
That Uber comic.
Okay, yeah, I picked it up. I don't know what it's about. I was a little afraid.
Yeah.
I don't know. The first thing I thought when I picked it up, this is like a white supremacist comic. I'm like, I can't have this.
And National
then I was
front
like,
propaganda.
Then I was like, no, I'll try it. We'll see. Maybe it's good.
there's a, 10,000 AD? Is that what it's called? The Judge Dredd world?
Oh, okay.
There was like a big, like magazine size comic for that.
Yeah, I didn't know that they had one this year. They had one last year, so maybe they're giving you old stuff.
Yeah, they probably threw some old stuff up. So I grabbed that. I got the Mouse Guard hardcover.
Yeah, they always go.
Yeah,
they've been doing that for like 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, they go all out. It's like a full on hardcover, like children's book.
Hardbound. Yeah, yeah. It has.
Yeah.
This one's kind of an anthology. Some of the previous ones were actually just like, just a Mouse Guard.
Single issue. Yeah. I don't know. There's some other stuff. There was like that new, year one reboot thing with like Batman Beyond on the cover.
Yeah. I got that one. Well, I just pretty much got everything that was pretty adult. I didn't grab any of the like the other crap because I just don't read it. But
the super kiddie stuff, or
yeah, no, it's pretty much like Free Comic Book Day is kind of like almost pseudo Customer Appreciation Day slash Gateway Drug Day, because really that's what like a big push is for, is like, let's get kids into the store and trick them into buying comics later in life. So
yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into our movie news. And I'll let you start with the first item.
Matt Smith is joining the new Terminator movie in a major role.
Who's Matt Smith?
Matt Smith is the something doctor. I think he's the 7th, I want to say. Or maybe 8th.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, and he's going to be playing a role next to Daenerys from Game of Thrones. I forgot her real name right now.
Uh-oh.
What do you mean, uh-oh?
I'm convinced that any movie that stars somebody from Game of Thrones is going to suck.
Oh,
unless they've already had a career before Game of Thrones.
Like Lena Headey. Like, okay.
Yeah, like every single movie I've seen that has somebody where I'm like, who the fuck is this? Why should I know who this actor is? And then they're like, oh, Game of Thrones. And I'm like, oh. Because, yeah, Kit Harington, Jason Momoa, that guy that was in The Other Woman.
Oh, you're talking about Jamie Lannister. His name, I can't, slips me as well.
And
he's like Swedish or something.
Yeah.
Emily Clark is her name. She will be playing Sarah Connor.
Okay.
I'm also, well, they actually have quite a cast list for this.
Yeah, I mean,
didn't know that.
The cool thing about this reboot of Terminator and why we should maybe care just a couple hairs more than the last reboot.
Sure.
Or the several last reboots they've tried to do either on TV or in film, is because this is being done by Annapurna Pictures and produced by Megan Ellison, who usually does prestige films like American Hustle.
No, you saw that little A thing pop up in front of a lot of good films for a while, and so when they did say that they were taking it on,
The Master, like those kinds of movies.
Exactly. Well, she also, the director's Alan Taylor. He's also a Game of Thrones guy who did Thor the Dark World is one of his films. But he also, he's been an HBO guy for a long time.
Yeah.
He's done other stuff besides Game of Thrones, but that's something that kind of pushed him forward a bit.
Yeah.
It has Arnold Schwarzenegger in it again. Mm-hmm. Jason Clarke. J.K. Simmons.
That's cool. Yeah.
The one thing that Jay Courtney is supposed to be playing Kyle Reese. Jay Courtney was the son of Bruce Willis in the newest
iteration. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, he sucks. I hate him. So
far. Well, he sucked in that, but it's if that's your only impression, it's kind of hard to judge from that.
Because
nothing was good in that movie.
No, very much agreed, but he was also in Frankenstein, whatever. I, Frankenstein, the iPod version of the Frankenstein.
He was in that.
So that's my impression still.
So yeah, you got Megan Ellison, who's really interesting and wow, and should, you know, big time producer. It'd be like, you know, something kind of like the Weinsteins at the height of their abilities. And then you have all of these like kind of red flags, like Jai Courtney and Game of Thrones actors,
Amelia Clark's been pretty, I think she's been pretty picky and choosy, so that might not be, maybe she'll overcome the curse. So.
And Schwarzenegger has been having quite a hard time coming back. Like, basically all of his films since his official comeback has all flopped.
Well, that era is pretty much done. Unless you can, like, distill it into, an Expendables movie, nobody gives a shit.
Well, we'll see how Expendables 3 does, because that might be the only thing to actually make a profit with him in it.
Yeah.
All right, my first news item. It looks like Simon Kinberg basically just confirmed the Deadpool movie. I'm reading this off of moviepilot.com. Says, Simon Kinberg, writer-producer for the X-Men films, was feeling pretty chatty recently during an interview with Collider, talking about what Fox plans to do with a fully realized adaptation of The Merc with a Mouth. And this is a quote from the interview. Yeah, it makes sense to me. Genuinely, it's early phases, early days, but if you're going to do a Deadpool movie, I think you've got to do a hard R, darker movie, and he is the perfect character to do it with. For him to say that it should be darker and he has a vision for it, that's whatever. That's just hearsay. That's just, we all do that every week.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to say early stages, early phases, is implying that there's development.
Yeah, and it's been kind of in that developmental hell for a long time, though.
Yeah, it has.
I mean, does it say anything more with, that actor?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds.
No mention of him. I'm thinking it's going to be a clean start over with the character.
Well, I can't remember who. The boys that did Zombieland before. I know that they took the first crack at it, and it was supposed to be kind of sort of meta and weird and stuff like that, and actually address how much the first Wolverine sucked.
Maybe they got in trouble for that.
They might have. Well, I guess it was still considered for a while, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Deadpool, I think, does have an ability, and he does. He's been kind of, I mean, he rose from super cult to just
pretty well
just barely cult character, and people
seem now he's to collaborating really like with Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
What if we get that before the official Deadpool movie?
That wouldn't be that weird for that. He's a weird character. He breaks the fourth wall a lot.
Yeah.
There's random stuff that happens. There's two voices inside of his head in the comics. He often will have dialogue with the actual author. He fights chicken men.
He's a very strange character because he's really ran the gamut of going the full circle between cool for cool's sake. Like, he's a Rob Liefeld creation. We're getting really comic geeky in this episode. He's a Rob Liefeld creation who invented a bunch of muscle-bound badasses in the early 90s, like Shatterstar and Cable and Deadpool. And he was just kind of one of those sort of characters. He had a cool suit, sort of looks like Spider-Man with swords. And then the character sort of evolved, and people tried to, like, turned that badassery ironically on itself and made him kind of insane, and they made it kind of funny. His comic really has a different tone depending on who's writing it.
Well, the first iteration of his own was pretty much just funny, and he was kind of just insane mostly.
Yeah.
And then he kind of died, but not really, but another person. It's very complicated history, but he's been more of a comic, not comic like as in the books, but as in like,
comedian.
Funny, yeah. Kind of character for a while. So, there's definitely a dark humor aspect, and I remember in one issue he's screaming about how much he loves B. Arthur. it could be fun, and always, though, to me, I was looking at it and I was like, it's going to be stupid unless they go R and they go for the character as is.
Yeah.
But we'll
see. You know who I think would do a really good job with it?
Who?
Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Who did the Lego movie and 21 Jump Street. Like, their type of thing.
Yeah, I think the boys who wrote Zombieland, that writing duo, I can't remember their names either right now, but I thought that they were a good pairing too. I think Zombieland was, you know, pretty decent. I liked that movie quite a bit. And then besides that, that aesthetic could work really well into like kind of an actioneer kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
So,
we'll see.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. Simon Kinberg. I can't remember if he's one of the good ones or bad ones. I get them all mixed up now.
Yeah.
Because there's like five, or it seems like there's a good like maybe like 8-10 people who do a lot of the comic book stuff, and there are a few that aren't as good as the others.
Mm-hmm. But why don't you go ahead with the last news item? What's the big one of the week?
The big reveal of this week, and you know what? It's actually fairly exciting. They revealed the Star Wars cast.
Yeah, the full cast.
Yeah, and they
of just trickling out actors.
Yeah, one by one. And the thing is they did keep it under wraps really well. And so then when they released it, you know, there was some kind of like pleasant surprises and stuff like that. And you get the whole round circle kind of like first read through thing. Mm-hmm. And it's generally, I don't know, it kind of piqued my interest a little bit more, which all right. I've been hesitant going in. So who we've got is, okay, you've got Harrison Ford. He will play Han Solo.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, they're playing, coming back.
Yeah, Chewbacca, you know, Peter Mayhew, Anthony Daniels, Kenny Baker, R2-D2. But your new people, you already had this one kind of conferred. Adam Driver will be playing a character, and it's rumored he'll be playing a Sith baddie. John Boyega, the lead boy on the block from Attack the Block, is going to be in it.
That's
alongside
cool.
Oscar Isaac from Inside Llewyn Davis.
Very cool.
Which is, yeah, no, that to me is...
that means that they actually want actors.
They want actors, and besides just wanting actors, to me, it actually, I don't know, there's something, like, exciting, because they're not picking, like, oh, this is a true blue, you know, somebody who's going to pay off. We want somebody who's going to fit a part.
Yeah,
and so
a character actor.
Yeah, and then you've got Andy Serkis, which, you know, if you want mocap, that's just going to happen these days.
Well, we don't know, though. Maybe he's going to be... He's played non-mocap characters before. Not a lot,
he's
going to
be a Rancor or something, whatever.
Yeah, or he's going to be Jar Jar Binks' like nephew.
Part dose, yeah. it's going to be all about him.
Domhnall Gleeson, who was in About Time and the Harry Potter movies.
Right. Max von Sydow.
Always
the
good.
Exorcist guy. He's also been in tons of other stuff, but...
A bunch of Bergman movies and... Yeah.
This is the only, like, fairly unknown, is the Daisy Ridley. And apparently she's been to Toast of London. Don't even have the faintest clue what that is, but...
British TV, I'm guessing? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But overall, my general consensus of it, this is exciting. Just to kind of get... I know they're doing 30 years after the film, and that's kind of the take they're going with it. I've also heard, I guess, some of the other rumor mills is that John Boyega and Oscar Isaac are going to be, like, buddies or something like that. I don't know. Does this pique your interest more? Because I know I was hesitant, but you were a little bit even more so.
I mean, yeah, I'm there's things about it that I feel are promising. I like the idea that they're talking about doing more practical effects. I like the idea that they brought on Lawrence Kasdan to do the screenplay or to revise it. I like the idea that J.J. Abrams, you know, maybe doesn't have the best track record in the world cinematically, but he's very much into this kind of material, and he's going to at least kind of have a fan sensibility for it. And this cast is really cool and really mixed and interesting, and they all have different flavors. You know, if as long as it's not like the other three prequels where everyone's on the same flat line, you know, you could have a lot of really fun chemistry between this cast. My only reservation at this point, other than the fact that I'm so Star Wars'd out, I just don't know how they're going to make me care.
Mm-hmm.
I just really don't need to see Han Solo, Luke, or Leia. I hope that their parts in the movies are minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I like, if as long as they're like there, just being like, "Hello, son, let me read you this story," and then all of a sudden something happens and we leave them for the rest of the movie, I would be okay.
Yeah, so you wouldn't want them to just be like general background characters. They have to be reading stories specifically. Gotcha.
I mean, or, you know, of the same kind of level of involvement as maybe like Luke's aunt and uncle.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a little bit more. They could be like, you know, kind of leaders of their time, because that would make sense, you know.
Yeah, I just don't want them really integrated in the plot. And like, I just hope that Kasdan and company don't feel like they really have to like do right by these characters. Like, we get it, they're important, you can imply that without having to make them full-fledged bit players in the movie.
Yeah, I don't care if they're bit players. To me, it's if they're done well, that's fine.
Yeah, they're just so old.
honestly I'm not Star Wars'd out. I was new episode Star Wars out.
You were Lucas'd out.
I was Lucas'd out from the first, yeah. Like, and also besides that, you have to change the special effects and make it better and blah, 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 blah. And no,
yeah.
Just give me my old... I love the old films still. I think
no, I do too. And when I watch them, I can still... Fantastic. Yeah, I can still enjoy those movies for what they are,
and so
and watch them in a vacuum without trying to consider all of the extended universe stuff. Yeah. But
well, what I'm saying is with a continuation of it, mm-hmm. That is actually even more interesting, because I mean, I did want to see the movie I wanted to see for prequels of Star Wars was Darth Vader hunting Jedi, but I was never going to get that because, you know, that's pretty dark material. but that's the kind of movie I wanted.
Yeah.
But no, I know that they've got a bunch in the works or whatever, but for this mainstay, this is the part I'm actually the most invested and interested in right now.
Yeah.
And just the cast on top of it, I'm like, yeah, I'm there. Okay, we'll give this a good shot. I mean, beyond it was just Star Wars, I guess, but...
Hmm. All right. Well, that's cool.
It sounds more promising, so...
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. Well, let's go ahead and get into the pet topic.
Okay.
Which is my turn this week, and I was kind of like trying to think, like, you know, what was I going to talk about in this episode, and I was kind of drawing a blank for a while, and then I looked up into the heavens, and on the top of my shelf here at my desk, I see my Sony video recorder back when I used to do internet videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking in connection a little bit with our review of the week, which is The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
How do you feel about obvious product placement in movies? It's becoming a bigger thing. We're seeing a lot more and more of it. And, you know, a lot of times when a movie's playing, especially a fast action movie where things are just flipping over other things,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times I can edit it out or I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you do see it, you can't unsee it, and then it's everywhere.
I mean, it depends for me. So I'm guessing the question is basically how I feel about it. Is it good? Is it bad? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Or in general, I know it's a movie per movie basis, obviously, but how do you feel about the practice of it? Obvious product placement. And how do you feel about its implementation in modern action films or films in general.
Sometimes it just doesn't bother me. Sometimes, let's just, I mean, just throw, like, Transformers, their problem definitely wasn't product placement. They had to be cars. Like,
yeah.
And if you're going to have a car in a movie, it's going to have a...
an immediate recognizability.
Well, it's going to, and besides that, they have to have vehicles. It can't be just nondescript. They can't make vehicles for this film, you know?
Yeah.
And so if they are all Acuras like they were in the Avengers or something like that, who cares? To me, it's just like, okay, these are big, you know, this is a big budget. They need some extra money. Makes sense. Sometimes it's sort of interesting, like House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That one's interesting. I don't know if I dislike it or like it. Because specifically with that one, there was the whole introduction of him in being into the PlayStation and playing video games. And so he would, like, he'd show the PlayStation, he'd play on the PSP, he would bring it up randomly with people. I thought it was kind of a ethical kind of moral thing. I'm like, that, you know, that's, you know, them going for the money over art, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares. It's film and TV. That's almost kind of the point of the art, and has been an integral part. With him specifically, I thought it was a weird, interesting character thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other recognizable ones? Man of Steel had a bunch of them. That one didn't. Brands, like, I don't know if you've walked down the street, but brands are everywhere in our daily
life. Yeah, we are. We are branded like crazy.
Yeah, and so... I understand kind of the resentment that goes along with it, like, from some people, because it's like, product placement, you're shoving this down my throat. I just want to be engrossed in the movie. And sometimes I can see how, you know, sometimes with framing, for example, in the Man of Steel movie, specifically, one when it kind of brought me out of the movie, is specifically they landed in front of a Sears. And it's not that they landed in front of the Sears. It's because where the characters were placed. It was like that rule of thirds. And specifically, the big Sears logo was in one of those lines. And so you weren't looking at the action. You were looking at Sears. And I was like, wow, that's like a billboard. Why don't you just raise up a sign in front of the projector right now?
And sometimes it is that obvious. I mean, sometimes it's okay. Like... if it makes sense for the scene, or it makes sense for, like in the case of like Transformers, where they are cars, and so that branding kind of lends itself.
Mm.
There are other times, and we'll get into Amazing Spider-Man, but there are other times, especially when it comes to mobile devices.
Okay.
When everybody has the exact same phone or has the exact same brand.
Right.
Or company. It's, You notice it once, and then, like I said, you can't unnotice it for the rest of the movie. You start to check. You're like, wait, what phone is that? Oh, my God.
I think you just have to tune out. I mean, especially, I don't know. We'll get into it more in that review. But, no, I think it can be distracting. And, I mean, obviously, if you make, like, fucking Lord of the Rings or something, and you have, like, a Nike symbol, like, that's pretty horrible.
I would be into that. If in the next one there was just obvious product placement, like... totally anachronistic. And
well, but what I'm
saying, I would be down. I would save that entire trilogy.
Like a period piece or something that has, you know, something about the Renaissance and they're, you know,
checking their iPhone.
Yeah, or like, you know, drinking some Pepsis or something. Yeah, it can be ridiculous. It can really take you out.
Yeah.
However, I think sometimes it's one of those things that people focus on, and I think people focus on it on good movies even, and been like, oh, that's stupid. Why would they do that? And it's like, well, kind of makes sense, really.
Yeah, most of the time, I honestly don't care.
Yeah, no, the brands to me, like, I just care if the movie's good.
Yeah.
And that's, I will almost, I, unless it was something ridiculous, like I've previously mentioned, I'm not going to ding a movie because of it.
Yeah, there are some times when it drifts into the dialogue. This doesn't happen in action movies so much. This happens usually in bad comedies,
mm-hmm.
where somebody will be like, well, I just don't know where how to do this. And they'll be like, dude, haven't you been on Google Maps? It's pretty much the only thing that works. You know what I mean? And then it's like literally just a little like half-second advertisement. Then I'm like, okay.
Well... And but see, even that, okay, something like Google, which yes, there are other things out there, but Google is such a huge entity within our lives.
Though, that movie, I didn't see it, but The Internship, that whole movie was just a commercial for Google.
Well, yeah.
The whole movie.
I haven't seen it, so I can't say if it distracted or not. But when you're talking about these things, if you're talking about it, to me it's almost hard. You can't ignore brand.
No, like, because they're everywhere. They're in our real lives.
Yeah, all over the place. Like, they're on your TVs. They're on your clothes. They're on they're on billboards. They're everywhere. So to me, it just depends. If you can place it in a way that's not like
distracting.
Yeah, just trick me into buying your just don't beat me over the head with it.
Yeah. The other option, of course, is to own it. You know, to either make a joke of it, like I think I'm sure they did in 21 Jump Street at some point. But there was also, or in the Lego Movie, which is basically a commercial for a toy, but they make a joke out of that from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But Josie and the Pussycats movie.
Okay.
The whole move, the product placement in that becomes a joke. It starts off like kind of like you would normally see in a movie. And it's like, eh. And then by the middle of the movie, you know, Tara Reid's in the shower and the shower curtain has McDonald M's all over it.
Right.
Or they're on an airplane and the Target symbol is everywhere. And it just becomes a running joke and it's, you know, fairly funny. Or in the opposite of that, the movie Repo Man by Alex Cox. They couldn't afford to have brands.
Is that with what's his face?
With Emilio Estevez. Yeah.
Oh. No, you mean the original one? Okay.
Yeah, the original, the real one.
Yeah.
In the movie, they don't have brands, but they have this like off brand everywhere you see. So, like, if it's a bag of potato chips, it's just a white bag that says potato chips on it, and then it's a, you know, there's a scene that's like, hey, grab me a beer. And then he gets in the fridge and you see a whole row of white cans that just say beer on it.
Right.
And then that becomes the joke.
You kind of had that, like, pseudo-ad thing there in the 90s for a while, too. Because I'm thinking of, I think I'm saying his name right, Verhoeven, the guy that did...
RoboCop and yeah. Showgirls and yeah.
Yeah. So you had that. But also, like, even you guys did Double Dragon a while ago. And there was fake ads in that.
Yeah.
So I remember there being a period where there were more like fake ads and things. So, so are we post product placement?
No, unfortunately, I think we're still pretty much in the thick of it. Okay. I mean, obviously, like a movie like the Lego Movie or like Josie and the Pussycats, where they turn it into satire, but they're also still making money from it. Or even like there was that.
Well, how do you make a Lego movie without advertising for Lego?
No, exactly. So you might as well be upfront about it. But there was that documentary Morgan Spurlock did, Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Made, which was all about branding.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of what I want to get into. But we should probably move into our official movie review for The Amazing Spider-Man Dose. And I'll let you set this one up.
Okay, so Spider-Man, still in high school, he's about to graduate, and at their graduation commencement, bad things are happening, and he makes it late, and then, graduation happens, and love interests are budding, and all that kind of thing with Gwen Stacy, and they have to break up, but then his friend comes in. Now, I have a hard time with this movie, because... Okay. I feel like I'm watching three movies, truthfully.
At least three. Yeah.
At least three. I feel like I'm watching a studio movie.
Yeah.
That specifically the studio told the director he had to make.
Yes.
And when I say that, anything to do with the Sinister Six, I feel like that. Anything with the character the Rhino in it felt very added on and unnecessary. And like you could cut it out of the movie completely and it would be fine.
Anything that has to do with Electro, I feel.
Yeah. Two, you have your dubstep, weird electronic movie, which happens at times.
Yeah, and, almost kind of like a Step Up movie. Like, there's like these weird, almost musical bits.
Yeah, and you kind of, there's the musical bits, but you also almost, I mean, and some of that stuff I like when we're talking about that, there's this part where Electro gets this weird, whispery, inner monologue, music-y, whatever stuff.
Yeah.
I actually dug that. I thought that was interesting. But then there's another moment where they're fighting and there's like lights lighting up. That's the second movie. And also the other problem is the big problem with the dubstep movie that was happening during this movie is that what you're having happening is they do some of the characters in it and it borders on a Batman Forever kind of territory.
Campiness.
And yeah. I just flat out didn't like that stuff.
How about the indie romance?
And then that was the third movie, the indie romance. Exactly.
There's a little 500 Days of Summer going on in between some scenes.
Yeah, and that was probably the best movie that was happening and the most consistent one. And at times the longest running one. What I think about this is it's kind of just a bad film.
Wow. You're ready to go with the B word. All right.
It doesn't hold up. I think that sometimes it gets... I don't think it blends all of these elements at all together. And you can obviously see that there are places added in where it's specifically it feels like the studio's like, we need to make this like the fucking Avengers. Let's do that. And, you know, I had so much mixed feelings during the film. You know, even when I got done with this, and if I watch the film with my wife, I usually we have a general discussion about it a little bit. Like, we don't get into it too deep, but the first thing that we both said is like, you know, when we started, did you like it? Did you not like it? Was, I don't know, kind of.
Yeah.
And as I came away from it, the things that I didn't like definitely stacked up against it. And the farther I've gotten away from it, the less I like, because anything that's good is kind of undermined by this other stuff. Also, we saw it at a large theater that does like 4K projection, so the digital, it's great. But what happens is this film was shot for 3D, and so you get this like, so when you're watching it in 2D, which I always watch all my films after me, if I watch it in 3D, it's the first time and that's it.
Yeah.
And so in general, I want my movies in 2D. And so if I see that some of the graphics look kind of cheesy or not very good because it was shot for 3D, I'm going to ding a movie for that.
Yeah.
And this was happening all over the place. I thought there was a lot of places where the graphics just didn't hold up. I watch a lot of old movies with, ranging in effects. Some of them are just straight up bad.
Mm-hmm.
That usually isn't the reason. The reason is because some of the cheesiness and corniness and whatever of it undermines like this other serious stuff. Also, sometimes the dialogue, I just don't, it didn't make sense. Like, there was a scene where Harry and Peter were on the beach like skipping stones, and
yeah,
he said it in a line and it made it seem like they were comparing he was comparing his love life with Gwen Stacy, with Harry's relationship with his dad, but that's not what they were talking about. And so just there was a lot of this, like, even the dialogue just didn't feel very polished or fleshed out. I guess the positives I'll get into now a little bit more is I do feel like Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone are still charismatic and good.
Mm-hmm.
Dane DeHaan that I usually like, I don't know if I really liked him in this. I thought he was pretty emo. And then Jamie Foxx, yeah, that he was a Batman Forever villain, straight up.
He was, yeah.
I mean, the only thing that kind of distracts you a little bit is that they do the like weird dubstep movie thing, but it just barely. Paul Giamatti just straight up bad.
I
just really, really hated him in it. Sally Field was fine. Just she's kind of undermined, and she has very little to do in it.
Yeah, but I think she manages to do a lot with what little she has. I think she's there to act.
There was specific... You know, I agree. In the scenes, she brings it. But there's a scene specifically where they cut back. She's, like, at the hospital supposed to be working.
Yeah.
And there's this, like, supposed to be the scene where you're supposed to be, like, caught up and that she's at the hospital and she's, like, trying to save patients because of the blackout. And mm-hmm. you just don't care because it has no tie into the movie,
to anything.
Really.
You're like...
And yeah. she's like, oh, all right, when the lights go back on, and you're, it's like you're supposed to be cheering, and it's like, no. You know, the love interest thing is the only thing that works in the whole movie. It's true. These two actors together.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll start with what I liked.
Okay.
I agree with you. I think that Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield are really good in this. And I did not like Andrew Garfield in the first one. And I mean, I like him as an actor a lot, but I felt like in the first one, he was either rushed and didn't have time to really come up with a character. So he was just throwing out every idea for the character he had from one scene to another. And it didn't feel like the same character from scene to scene. In this one, I felt like he blended those different tones together between awkward and kind of angry and sort of, confused and confident and all of that stuff really works together really well here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Emma Stone is just, she's just magnetic. You can't help but watch her, and she effortlessly steals every scene she's in. And I think the two of them together, maybe it's because they're dating in real life, but they have a lot of chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I care way more about them in this movie than I ever cared about Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, and again, I gave that a positive because I never liked. I'll just say it. I never liked Tobey Maguire or Kirsten Dunst. That was one of my nicks for the movies. But what the old movies always got right was the villains.
And yes, I think that
and the trajectory of the story and why the villain is important in this kind of a story, in a yes. superhero story. Whereas in this film, the villains are there. They exist.
Well, okay, the movie is just, besides the emotional arc and the story with a capital S stuff, that does strangely kind of work whenever whenever it remembers to get to it, all of the comic book stuff, all the action movie stuff, all the genre stuff is really mishandled or overstuffed. There's just way too much going on in this movie. It's like they skipped Spider-Man 2 and just went straight to Spider-Man 3.
Well, to me, it seems like they took 2 and mixed it with 3. They just, like, blended it all in a big old bowl.
And you would think that after seeing what happened with that franchise, they would try not to copy those mistakes, but... Yeah, I mean, it hops from plot to plot to plot the entire movie, and I feel like there's so many threads running through this. You know, yes, there's we got to catch up with Electro and his origin story, and then we got to catch up back with Gwen Stacy and the romance story, and then we got to catch up with Harry Osborn and that story, and then we got to do the whole Richard Parker backstory, and then it's weaving all of these things throughout the entire movie, and nothing gets developed. Nothing is able to really realize any of its potential because nothing has time to do it. Then you have these superfluous bookends with the Rhino that just feels really bolted on, and it's just 20 minutes that could have been easily cut out of the movie. In a 2 hour and 20 minute movie, might I add.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to sound kind of strange saying this, but this is a totally mangy mess of a movie, and a lot of stuff doesn't work here. Yeah. And a lot of the dialogue is pretty bad, especially the repartee between the villains and Spider-Man in action. A lot of that is just, like, as bad as anything that Raimi got accused of. But I do kind of like this movie a hair more than the original reboot with Andrew Garfield, only because I cared about that relationship. And ultimately, if I'm able to kind of wade through all of the superfluous side story stuff or the action movie stuff that sometimes works, most of the time doesn't, I have something to anchor me in the movie, which I never had in the first one. In the first movie, yeah, it was maybe more streamlined, but it all felt airless, and I didn't care about anything that was happening, and most of it was just retread from the first Spider-Man movie we've already seen.
And I agree that it was... We've talked about this at length before, and I agree with the retread, but I've never... But pretty much everything else, I disagree with you. I thought that there was a story arc and things happened. Where in this film, it didn't. Like, and what I think is if they would have took out one of these movies, which is obviously the one that the studio imposed.
Yeah, I think
this would have been a fine movie, actually. I don't think
Roger Corman has this old adage that he used to say back when he used to produce exploitation films, that if you take any movie and shake it hard enough, 20 minutes will fall out.
Yeah.
In this movie, an hour and 20 would fall out. No, it's just far too long, and there's
it's not just the too long, it's the fact that we've kind of been talking about it's
unstructured,
it's super, yeah, it doesn't need to exist. There are parts that just do not need to exist. It's
you
not
can
even
see
like,
the rewrites,
yeah,
and, you can see the rewrites, you can see the studio notes. You can see every single time they had to do a reshoot or something. Like, it, all of the movies, like, it feels like there's too many cooks in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like how Spider-Man 3 felt. Except for, in this movie, I think maybe it's a little tonally more consistent. But I don't know. I honestly feel like you could cut everything with Electro. I don't think the villain works. I think he's really... cheesily done, and I don't even know why they wanted to have Jamie Foxx come in and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the beginning of the movie, he's playing against type as like this dweeby guy that just it's kind of cringeworthy to watch. It is almost like Peter Sarsgaard in Green Lantern, and then or like Jim Carrey from Batman Forever. Mm-hmm. Like it's basically the same arc. And then when he becomes this blue, basically Dr. Manhattan god, Electro, then he's just the CGI thing with a voice modulation that it could be anybody playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And he honestly, thematically, has no real purpose in the movie. Honestly, the better villain would have been Harry as a Green Goblin.
Yeah.
I think Dane DeHaan's actually... I think he has a lot of shitty dialogue that he has to try and deliver as well as he can.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he has those moments, and there were a few moments in the movie, even in this movie, where I was like, damn, he's good. When he's good.
Well, I'll say that. I said he was bad, but there are moments when he's really bad, and then there's moments where he's really good. But that's kind of a problem with the whole film.
The movie is all over the place.
I think there are generally like really great moments in the film.
Yeah. I think there's an edit. There's an hour and a half minute... There's like a 90-minute movie in there that works.
Well, the other thing that's kind of like sad about this too, for me as a fan, I'm not going to even say that I'm not. I don't feel like I'm being a fanboy. What I'm saying is about the movie. They touch on the fact that Spider-Man can stand for a lot of these like big emotional issues. That happen in life, and that supervillains and the other things are these big operatic, like, kind of working out these kind of issues in life.
Yeah, they're metaphors.
Yeah, at a metaphorical level, they touch on that in this film and then don't deliver it.
No.
And
that, because they don't have time to. Well, they have 2 hours and 20 minutes, and nothing has enough time because there's so much of everything.
Mm-hmm. From my perspective, this is just a frustrating film. I don't think when it adds all up, I think it's a bad film. And I know we differ in this, but I do think it's not as good as the first one. I think the first one's at least consistent. It tells you a story. It stays tonally consistent as well. Like, and I'm talking not just visually, but also like story oriented. And this one just kind of went way too off the rails.
No, it's way off the rails. I mean, it's a complete blazing mess, but
maybe
there are
it's
things...
also probably hard after watching a film like Captain America that was so on the rails and they were so directed that now I have to watch this. It's like, okay.
Yeah, cool. It definitely seems like it has a lot of catching up to do. But I don't know. I there are things in the movie that I liked quite a lot, as much or more than anything I've seen in a Spider-Man movie. There's things in this movie that's worse than anything I've seen in a Spider-Man movie. And it goes like that for the entire thing. You're up and down the whole time. And I guess, yeah, the experience of it is a failure, but it has higher highs for me than anything in the consistent mediocre lukewarmness of the first one. Honestly, and you can tell me if you agree with this, I have a theory about why this movie is the way it is.
Okay.
Besides the fact that it feels like there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I feel like this is a product of this new buzz-generating marketing campaign stuff that's going for movies that we participate in every week on this podcast in our news segment. I feel like this movie, they had to load up as much stuff as possible so that they could trickle out reveals for 6 months before it came out and said, well, we can't just say there's a villain and a love story. We got to say, oh, there's this villain. Oh, and look who's going to be in it. Oh, and this person might make a cameo. And they have to build this marketing campaign that lasts at least a year before the movie ever comes out. But the movie eventually has to come out with all of that shit.
Well, they want to, what they, yeah. No, I think I can agree because I think, okay, so what they want to do, and honestly, I think this is true, is they want to be Marvel.
They do.
Because Marvel does, they have this, like, just basically system that just plows forward. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they try to create buzz around their movies. I think their movies create buzz because...
Well, they already have an infrastructure built for it. It's already there, set. Like, now it's just this thing that's, you know, moving forward.
Well,
it's
now
just
you
this,
have one of your
this
most...
this unstoppable train.
So Marvel is... this is their one of their most intimate characters that you can get most into his life. It handles big-ish, you know, big, like... esoteric kind of ideas like death and things like that. And now what you're doing with it is you're just putting product place. Yeah. I can see where you're going at it. I thought you were going to go into like the whole Sony, like, product place.
Oh no, that is definitely a problem with them. I mean, the Sony is just relentlessly everywhere.
That doesn't bother me just because it's through Sony Studios, so I'm like, well, it's probably cheaper for them to be like, here's your cameras,
I'm
here's
sure
your computers,
is.
here's
your phones,
here's
your what's going to be on,
yeah,
here's what's going to be on, even the old computer when he finds like Richard Parker's old train and like his lab setup, even that's a Sony.
Yeah, I don't that think they'd be. no, but do I think it's because of the buzz? I think you might be onto something. But again, I do agree. Some of the highs in this movie were the highest of highs. Like, honestly.
Yeah, anytime Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield are on the screen, you drift away into a better movie.
And so basically with that, I know that there was like groundworks for that movie. And maybe I can't tell if that's just because the material was already there and you got two of the right actors and casting is like, they say it's like 90%, but obviously that 90% didn't work in this film. So, I don't know. I think this is just kind of too much of a mess.
Yeah, it's a pretty big mess. I don't know. There's things about it I recommend. The movie as a whole, I think, ultimately doesn't work, and it proves that this reboot was rushed, and now it's competing. Not only is it rushed to. Yeah, ill-conceived and rushed, but now it's also trying to compete against something that had way bigger head start. And it's all just problematic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't distill it completely with this film because, holy shit. You never know where you're going to be in 5 seconds. Totally.
No, you could go to the bathroom and come back for a different movie.
Right.
It's just crazy. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into our final review of the week, which is the Netflix homework. Anything we recommend in this segment is available to watch on the Netflix instant streaming. The movie I had you watch this week was Uncle Boon Me, Who Can Recall His Past Lives. the Thai film directed by Pichapong Worisethakul.
You do that very well. I'm very proud of you.
I practiced.
Did you? Did you look it up in interviews to see how it was said and everything? Or
I've heard before, yeah.
Oh, you've heard it. Okay.
But, okay, so this movie, how do I describe this?
Good luck.
Yeah, it's sort of a romance family drama of sorts about a man named Boonmi, who lives in Thailand, who is on the last leg of his life. He's undergoing dialysis treatments, kidney failure, and his family and like hospice patients or hospice caretakers are kind of involved in his life. While this is happening, he starts to have these visions. It's kind of unclear as whether they're visions or they're just actually happening within the diegesis of the film. But you start to see these strange things. You start to see this, you know, these past people from his life, like ghosts of a family member, a man who has become part of an army of glowy-eyed Bigfoots. There's a scene in the middle of the movie that may or may have not have been in his past life, where a woman copulates with a catfish.
Okay, you did bring that up.
What did you think of Uncle Boonmi?
This movie, I would often like find myself being like, what the hell's going on? And sometimes, yeah, I felt like I wasn't paying attention to the movie enough, but I was. Like, I was paying full attention, but at times I had no idea what the fuck was going on. I was just like, okay, Monkey Man, got you.
Yeah.
And they would explain in the dialogue as you went along that this was supposed to represent his son, and I don't know, maybe you're trying to, like, educate me about Southeast Asia and the communist kind of stuff, because
yeah, there was some stuff that kind of historically was echoed some of the stuff in Indonesia with the that movie we watched, The Act of Killing.
Yeah. So I felt like this was like you were trying to teach me something, and I was like, no, I won't learn. But I don't know. I don't know, like, the movie a lot of times was very dark, like, and you know, you were meditating on like the last like of his life. Yeah. He was like dying, and so that was the purpose of all those scenes being darker. But sometimes I just couldn't see in the scene very well, and so it just...
Oh, you mean lit dark?
Lit darkly, yes.
Yeah.
But in general, I don't know. It happened. I don't know if I liked or disliked it, but it happened. Okay. In general, I don't know if I'd really recommend it unless you're into this kind of thing. I am kind of into, I like kind of experimental film and foreign film and stuff like that. And I just thought this was weird. I didn't get it.
Weird. It's very weird. And it is, kind of obtuse.
Well, the other thing too is, so I tried to look it up and get a bigger grasp, because sometimes when with these films I just, you know, I that's what I need. And when I got into it, like, the filmmaker, apparently this was supposed to be about the death of film, and I was like, that doesn't make any fucking sense with what was going on. So I
that
took
sounds
it,
really theoretical. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think he's full of bullshit, but
I don't know if that's even his intention.
Maybe not, but for me it was just kind of this existential kind of like reflecting back on life when you're about to die kind of thing.
That's pretty much how I took it. And I think that the, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff in here, and the movie is quite slow. You know, it's moving at a kind of a glacial pace, as you move along, and that's okay. It doesn't need to be, any faster than it is for the type of movie that's trying to be.
Doesn't need to be a dubstep.
No, it doesn't need to be, energetic per se. It is kind of a little more somber, but you know, I think what you're talking about, the whole thing with like you think you weren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of had the same experience, and I think the reason that is because the movie is when there isn't monkey people on the screen or where there isn't people having sex with fish, it's fairly naturalistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't go into, like, you know, clear dream sequence. Even, like, movies that deal in dream logic, like we talked about last week with The Trial or, like, a David Lynch film or something more Western, this film's very Eastern. And it, you know, when there is something what we would consider surreal or sort of otherworldly, it's there more for a thematic purpose. It's there more for a spiritual metaphor. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, I mean, I picked that up because of, like, the ghost wife and the monkey son, but...
Yeah.
These characters kind of
drift into this otherwise very natural movie. You're watching just people have these conversations like you would see in any other kind of, like, foreign film, and then all of a sudden a ghost appears. And, okay, that's in the scene now. How do we treat that? And I think... It isn't for everybody, and I don't think that it's particularly entertaining other than to gaze at its totally unique bizarreness. But I do think that it is a good movie made for good reasons, and I think that if you do take it largely just about being in the last years of your lives and reflecting upon mortality, it works on that level despite trying to figure it out.
So what specific, maybe I see, and this is one of those films too that maybe I just miss out on some cultural identifiers.
I think there's a lot of stuff I miss out on.
I get the whole reflecting about, like, youth kind of thing with the princess story. I have no idea why her and the fish got it on.
Well, I was trying, because it, you know, some of these visions are of, quote unquote, his past lives. So maybe he
that
was
seemed,
her.
Yeah, but
maybe he was the fish.
I guess. You're saying that, okay.
Maybe the opening scene, he was the bull? Because it's an extremely Eastern Buddhist film.
Yes.
And like a lot of those myths or religious iconographies, if you have no context for it, it just reads weird. But I think that the natural stuff, the natural world stuff, works well enough that I'm kind of able to sort of go with it. And it's, you know, the imagery is striking. The scenes in and of themselves, I liked the way it was lit.
Well, it gets brighter earlier, but there's specifically some scenes where I feel like they could have... I think it needed a little bit more just because everything was blending together to me. And I just, like, I don't know what's happening here. Maybe it was just the streaming quality. I don't know. Overall, I agree with you. I think that within context, if you know some of these other things, maybe it could be a very good film. However, from my standpoint, it was just kind of weird. And I didn't get it completely. It's a little too obtuse for me to wrap my little brain around.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that maybe it opens up on repeat viewings. I don't know if I necessarily want to go there.
And that's another thing I was going to say. It would need repeat viewings, but I don't feel like I want to go back to it.
Yeah. I would recommend it to people who are, A, interested in foreign films / specifically Eastern philosophy, and sort of, you know, outside of, like, Hong Kong, Japan kind of foreign films, like, you know, some of the stuff that's a little bit more meditative.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good example, but it is.
Well, I've seen other.
It's kind of hard work.
I can't remember what the film's called now. Ah, damn it! No, never mind. Just cut all this.
Well, what do you have for us next week?
So next week we'll be doing Short Term 12. It's it was a little indie flick that came out last year. It's got the lovely Brie Larson in it, and It should be good. It was.
I heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, it was on a lot of top 10 movies of last year. So
yeah. Well, cool. And if anybody has anything to say about anything we've talked about in this episode, whether any of our news items, Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Uncle Boom Me, or Short Term 12, you can get in contact to us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com, which is our email. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/jabberpodcast. And you can see whenever we post new episodes, when we post any updates about the show, or you could suggest Netflix homework to us if you would like to do that, and go through the proper channels. And you should be able to find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and stream us from your favorite mobile device as well as Pocket Cast. And when you're on iTunes or Stitcher, be sure to click a star rating and give us a little sentence or two about what you think about the show. You can read my movie reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at salivorkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read Richard's blog that he's been updating slowly but surely at rdwally.weebly.com. You can read the stuff that I do for the Seattle-based website, The MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And be sure to check out this week's episode of The Quarter Life Crisis because I'm on it. They had one of their co-hosts short, so they brought on me and another guy, and we actually have a full-on debate about Zack Snyder. We talk a little bit about the 10-year anniversary of Mean Girls, as well as the Star Wars casting, which we discussed on this show. So, until then, you can talk to us next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.